soul, whether he does so consciously or unconsciously, looks for the coming of a miracle within his own life. His hope is eternal, that one day God, or luck, or circumstance, whichever label he chooses to put upon his chosen deity, will reach forth and with a magic wand touch him upon the shoulder, thereby transforming him into the creature of his dreams and changing his whole existence. He does not realize that the manifestation of the miracle lies within his own grasp, nay, within his own being. Now, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen, said St. Paul. Faith, then, is the first ingredient necessary to bring forth the miracle, a strong, unshakable faith which places its full attention upon its objective and never for one moment wavers in its purpose. The objective should, of course, be God alone. Seek ye first the kingdom of heaven, and all of these things shall be added unto you. Jesus admonished and gave man the key to the secret place of the Most High when he said, the kingdom of heaven is within. The pattern begins to unfold as the veils of ignorance are removed from before our vision, enabling us to see more clearly. We now realize that the driving urge within each man to seek relief from want and suffering and to find perennial happiness is actually his subconscious memory of his lost paradise and the bliss of God he once enjoyed. We are aware, too, that through the misuse of his own will, he fell from that high estate. The urge to regain this bliss becomes paramount in his being. In fact, it is his one religion which he seeks to express in many and varied forms according to his past karma and his present state of spiritual consciousness. Man does not start in the first grade of school today and graduate from the university tomorrow. Rather, he progresses one step at a time. He studies the lessons, takes the tests, and passes the examination necessary to qualify him for the next grade. During this stage, his attention is centered upon himself and his own effort of accomplishment. When he has graduated from elementary school, he is ready for the University of Higher Knowledge. His vision becomes broader and more universal in character as he learns to relate his own existence with the rest of the world around him. Finally, he is ready to graduate from college. The big day arrives when he receives the diploma which will proclaim to the world that he is a fully accredited student. Having attained this prize, most students are content to sally forth and labor at that level, choosing the profession which is closest to their hearts. However, a few, recognizing the need for higher learning, persist in their endeavor to conquer greater heights and more distant lands. These attain their master's degree, having become specialists in their chosen field. Just so is man's spiritual evolution. In the dawn of his understanding, he turns his face toward God and walks with stumbling footsteps along the path which is as yet dimly lighted. He has been in utter darkness, having tried to satisfy his inherent need for peace and bliss through the medium of the senses, and has found himself suspended like a marionette on a string between the dual forces of good and evil. In this extremity, he cries out, O my God, have mercy upon me. It is this very instant that the grace of God descends upon him, awakening him from his dream of separation. Eagerly, he searches everywhere, seeking at first outside himself the God whom he has at last acknowledged. His seeking follows the path and takes the form which best satisfies his need for the moment, and he pursues it adamantly to the exclusion of all else until he has learned the lessons, taken the tests, and passed the examination of that particular grade in life. Having qualified himself for the next step, he moves upward, ever seeking the brighter light of understanding. As the delicate tendrils of his faith grow stronger, he seeks to express himself through ever-widening horizons until one by one the sheaths of darkness disappear, and he is ready to look into the mirror of his own soul. It is then that God, in his infinite mercy, takes human form and appears as the Guru, the Master, the Christ, who leads the soul from darkness into the light. Gently and carefully, he nurtures the child on the path, directing him to seek the pearl of wisdom within the temple of the living God. He teaches that the venture which takes us on the journey of self-knowledge and self-mastery is the most fascinating adventure in the world, because within man is a miniature universe with which it is his great privilege to become acquainted. Meditation is the ship which carries him on his journey to new and beautiful places. Concentration and willpower act as the rudder which steers the ship, and the devotee's flame of love, devotion, and worship provide the fuel to propel his ship through the waters of delusion until his boat comes to rest on the shores of God's infinite wisdom and bliss. As his love and attention become anchored in the Guru, his faith increases to the point where it becomes unspoken prayer, which goes on building power until the thought of God takes hold of him, of his consciousness, automatically forcing him to repeat his sacred name. With God's name ever upon his lips, man is filled with the love and the bliss of his presence. The ecstasy of his communion with him creates the overpowering desire to surrender himself and everything he possesses to the one beloved, who is at once the cause and the result of his being. Realizing at long last that he carries heaven within his own body temple, that within is all light, wisdom, love, beauty, and perfection, he surrenders his life at the feet of God. As he gradually sheds his human consciousness and replaces it with the cosmic consciousness of God, he begins to manifest his perfection inwardly and outwardly, until he is consumed in the flame of his light and love. Who can describe the bliss felt through communion with God? One must experience it to know what it is like. And after one has had the experience, still it remains indescribable. You having trouble, Jim?
No.
Does anybody have a lozenge or something that they can give Jim? Who is it? Okay. Anyway, our Bible reading for today is Ecclesiastes chapter 3, beginning with verse 1. To everything there is a season, and a time to every purpose under the heaven, a time to be born, and a time to die, a time to plant, and a time to pluck up that which is planted, a time to kill, and a time to heal, a time to break down, and a time to build up, a time to weep, and a time to laugh, a time to mourn, and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones, and a time to gather stones together, a time to embrace, and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to get, and a time to lose, a time to keep, and a time to cast away, a time to rend, and a time to sow, a time to keep silence, and a time to speak, a time to love, and a time to hate, a time of war and a time of peace. What profit hath he that worketh in that wherein he laboreth? I have seen the travail which God hath given to the sons of men to be exercised in it. He hath made everything beautiful in his time. Also he hath set the world in their heart, so that no man can find out the work that God maketh from the beginning to the end. I want to talk to you this morning about the path of truth. You have come to a very important time in your lives. This is a time for new beginnings, a time for new awakening in truth. Many of you are taking Kriya for the first time. Many of you have had it many times before. Those of you who have worked at it have had, some of you, tremendous results. But if you have not had tremendous results, even though you have practiced it correctly, done it religiously, still you have made progress, because don't forget that every time you do this Kriya technique once, you attain the same evolution. You progress as much as you would in 1 year of ordinary living. Think of it. Just one Kriya, the technique of revolving the life current around the spine and through the brain, gives you one whole year's development that you would otherwise have to live in travail, as it says in here, and many times in misery, sometimes in joy. You know, we're always looking for peace and happiness, but we look outside of ourselves. We look to people, we look to things, we look to possessions, we look to accomplishments. But the real peace, The real realization of oneness with God can be found only within yourself. Why is that? Because Christ said, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and nobody can go to the Father except through me. Now, exactly what does that mean? Does that mean that nobody can go to the Father except they believe in the one man, Jesus Christ, who lived 2,000 years ago? It is said he was the carpenter of the universe. But let's ask ourselves, did this universe not exist long before 2,000 years ago? Its age is so ancient that man has no idea of the age of this earth, because we constantly have upheavals through earthquakes. We have tidal waves, so that continents are buried, mountains are washed away, and still the world goes on, because when something goes down, something else comes up. It has to keep the balance in the world, and that's the way things go. So we have to really look at the truth of things. Now, you have perhaps been in many churches. You have studied, some of you, many religions. You have heard many teachers speak to you. But you have come to this moment where now you have not been satisfied with what has been given you. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here. So you have come to the moment of truth, of soul-searching, of self-searching. Who am I? Where did I come from? What is truth? What do I want to become? What are my chances? Is it a fact that I'm a human being that is born as a tiny baby and lives 50, 60, 70, or 80 years, perhaps more, if I'm lucky, and then I leave this earth never to come back again? Is that all there is to life? Is that all there is to God? Now, we're told that after we die, we go to heaven. Well, that's a lovely prospect, but what is heaven and where is it? Well, Jesus gave us the answer. The kingdom of heaven is within. No place else within. Now, we have the outer heaven, that's true. Because you have a universe within yourself that is an exact replica in miniature form of a universal thing. The whole universe is within yourself. And just as this universe has developed because of the ideas, the creative force which came from you for the things that have been built upon the earth which God originally built, so also it is within yourself. Now, we know that we wouldn't have this church building, we wouldn't have the homes in which we live, we wouldn't have the buildings, the downtown shopping areas, all of the resorts, all of the things that we call living would not be here, would they? Unless they had first originated in man's mind. Everything originates in idea form first. Everything. There is nothing that did not originate in your mind. You cannot possibly think a thought without creating an image of a person, a place, or a thing. It is literally impossible. And as you create, so you build your life. So you build the other things. If I want to build this podium, I first have to think the idea that I have a need for a podium. So then the need creates an idea, well, how could I arrange something so that I could put my Bible on and all of the various things that I'm going to need. So I think to myself, well, all right, now if I build it in this style, that would serve very nicely. I'll put a light here. I've got a place that with a graduated board here that will keep my Bible in an upright position and all the rest of it. I've got electrical outlets here. So my mind gets creative, and it creates all of this picture. And then I think to myself, all right, now that's what I want. What do I have to do? What do I have to get in order to bring this into manifestation? So I sit down and I draw a blueprint. And after I have drawn the blueprint, I look at it, I make whatever corrections are necessary, if they are necessary. And then I think to myself, all right, now the next thing I have to do is to get the material, and then the tools, and somebody who is qualified to build this. Otherwise, nothing is ever going to happen. So I do all of these things, and all of this originated in idea form first, went step by step into a light form, an idea of me went into a light form, and then it was put forth and all the materials necessary, and here I have my podium. The same thing is true within your own body temple. Every time you think a thought, you create a picture of a person, a place, a thing, a possession. Is it not so? It cannot help but be so. So you build your own inner world. So we have people inside of this frame of ours. We have places inside of this frame of ours. We have tribes, and we know that in this world of duality, we have one set of tribes fighting against another. The Hindu scriptures bring that out. They also have the tribes, the Pandus and the Kauravas. And we have the Israelites and the Egyptians. And it all speaks about the development of man within. Every single thing that is written in this scripture is the history of the evolution of every man from the human to the divine. And when Jesus made that famous statement that I am the way, the truth, and the life, nobody can go to the Father except through me, he was not speaking of himself as an individual. He was speaking of the Christ consciousness in every man, because we have seven spinal centers, beginning with the coccygeal, the base of the spine, then the sacrum, the lumbar, the dorsal center, which is the dividing center between the three upper ones and the three lower ones, and is the battle of Armageddon within yourself when the time comes for you to pick up your cross, which is your body. As I stand upright with my arms outstretched and my feet together, I am in the form of a cross. And it is upon this cross that my human ego, the Son of Man, must be crucified in order that the Christed One, the Son of God, may come into being. And so, as I go up the spinal stairway, next I find the cervical center. And then finally comes this center of Christ consciousness, which is the sixth center. Now, when man, in his human state of consciousness, is going about the world, doing all of the things that man ordinarily does, usually his mind is totally functioned upon worldly things. But the time comes when, through the suffering which he has brought upon himself through his own misuse of his own free will, his own wrong choices, he has to lift up his eyes to the mountain of his own being. He has to go up into the mountain of consciousness within himself, as Jesus went up into the mountain to pray. And man has to do that. And at that time when he lifts his whole being and cries out for help, God sends someone to teach him, to help him. Now, in the beginning, there are many teachers that come. But when you are ready to walk the last mile, when you are ready to get over that hump and go through that sixth center of Christ consciousness, which is the way, the truth, and the life, then, and then alone, does God send you a true teacher, one who has gone the full path, who has suffered every inch of the way of the cross and the crucifixion. I have many times been criticized by people who have not even seen me in other denominations. I have been burned in effigy. I have been denounced as a Satan or an angel of Satan, as an antichrist, as the devil incarnate, and a few other things. But I dare any one of these people to stand before me and tell me that they love God as much as I did from the standpoint that I gave my life for him. I actually went through the way of the cross and through the crucifixion, and I experienced the human death within myself, and still I stand before you. Is this impossible? No. It says in the scriptures, I die daily, doesn't it? So it is possible. And that's what every man must go through, whether he do it in this incarnation or in some other incarnation, before he can finally be and feel what he should be in God. He must realize that he is the Son of God, now and eternally. As I told the people in the Seattle group many times, I do not have any sinners. I only have God's children. Naughty or good, we are all his children. And it is not up to us to judge any one individual. That is God's prerogative alone. It is our responsibility. And we will not get where we should be until we assume that responsibility of giving love to God in every form that stands before us, regardless. Jesus went among the poor people. the publicans, the sinners, the harlots, all of them. And he held out the path of righteousness, the path of truth. But above all, he gave love and forgiveness. And he asked them to make a new way, to start on a new path to God. And so this idea took hold, and it has spread all over the world. You know, it is my dream someday to really make the Christ live for every single person on this earth in some way. Regardless of what you call him, whether it be Krishna, Buddha, Mohammed, or the Christ, whatever name you put upon your chosen deity, still, that is the Christ within every man. He is universal. You cannot limit him. He is in every atom of space. He is in every form. He is in your form, in my form, in every form that walks this earth and lives and breathes and has its being. But man alone has the consciousness necessary to enable him to go within himself as the Christ enjoins us to do, to climb up into the mountain of our own being, to close the door of this temple, because he also said, ye are the temple of God. This is the temple of the living God. God lives in us. There is no other life, you see, but the life that permeates every place. There is no other intelligence. There is no other power. We are always constantly keeping before us the idea of good and of evil. Even evil is good because it causes suffering, and it brings you to the point where one day, through the suffering which you brought upon yourself, you have no place else to go but to God. And how can we have two powers, two forces, when it is said that God is omnipotent? That means there is but one power. He is omniscient. That means there is one wisdom, one wisdom. He is omnipresent. There is only one presence in this whole wide world. So what do we call Satan? What are we doing with him? We become whatever we concentrate upon. If we see good, if we see the beautiful, if we give love, then that's what we get in return. God sat in his heaven in all of his beauty, his love, and his purity. And from the love, the great love within himself, this whole creation came into being. It is not really a creation, it is an expression of God living his life. This is the ebb and the flow of his being. And when you stop to think of it in those terms, isn't it a beautiful and a wonderful ideal? And it is the truth, you see. But God was. And then he projected himself from himself in all of his glory, his beauty, his wisdom. And he went out from himself. And having gone out from himself, he saw that what he was good. So he decided he would sustain himself. And so he did. And then, having expressed himself, sustained himself, he wanted to withdraw himself into himself again. So this he did. Now this is one power, going out, sustaining itself, and coming back. But because it goes out and it comes back, it creates two opposite poles. We have a polarity here. And so one seems to be in opposition to another. But it isn't. It's just God doing his thing. It really is. Just God doing his thing. And it's fascinating. It's really fascinating when you know that. And so when you come to look at it, your whole world changes. Your ideas of right and wrong even change. And you see somebody who perhaps isn't doing as you would do, but then look in your past and see what you've done before and ask yourself if you have any right to criticize. You see somebody just on the path of that particular state of development, going through the experiences which are necessary to get them to the point where they're ready to surrender themselves and everything they have and lay that at the feet of God. When you come to that point, I know so well. I cried for God. Tears rolled down my cheeks. I was totally consumed by him. I wanted nothing in the world. I wanted to give up everything if I could only have him. And it was that intense love, that intense desire for God that brought me to the point where I can stand before you and tell you every inch of the way of the truth of the cross and the Christ. Every inch of it. And I don't care who wants to deny it or who says it isn't true. They don't know what they're talking about because they haven't done what I did. And therefore, they are in no position to judge. You know, knowledge comes, real knowledge, comes through experience. Because when you actually experience something, when you go through it, it brings about realization. And that is totally different than believing through faith. Because you have not had the experience and you therefore cannot know. You have an idea which has been implanted in your mind, has been offered to you, and you have either accepted or rejected it. God is everywhere equally present. He is in every religion, in every church, and make no mistake about that. Everyone chooses that path, that particular teacher, which his consciousness is ready to receive at that moment. In fact, he cannot do anything else. He is unable to. His consciousness has not yet expanded to the point where he's willing to reach beyond. It's like the article that I wrote. You can't start in the kindergarten today and graduate from the university tomorrow. You have to go through every single class. You have to learn the lessons, take the tests, and pass the examinations, and then you are promoted. But when the day really comes, when you have graduated from college, then those people who really want to do some pioneering work, that they want to be the finest that anybody can be on earth, these are the ones that go out for the doctor's degrees, the master's degrees. And they are the ones, the true pioneers in the spirit, just the same as these things happen in the outward sense. And it's a fascinating adventure to finally learn that truly you can go on this adventure in search of your real self. But so many people go here, they go to the Himalayas, they have to go to the forest, or they go to the ocean, and they live in a cave or on top of a mountain house, thinking that if they're going to escape from where they are and go someplace else, that God is there, but not here. If he is omnipresent, where can you go where he is not? It is like escaping from God to go to God. And it doesn't make sense, does it? It really doesn't. God is right here, right where you are, right within you, within every form you see. Now, maybe you can't love each individual person, but you can certainly love God. And as you see the good and the beautiful in each one who comes before you, and as you forget to look for the bad, then your own consciousness changes, because you do yourself a disservice when you do anything else. You insult God, who is in that form, when you do anything else. And don't forget, how would you feel if somebody whom you were working for all the time, for instance, was constantly after you and saying, I don't like your work. You're a stupid idiot. My gosh, haven't you ever learned anything in this life? Why can't you straighten up and fly right? I've taught you I don't know how many times, and still you're not doing it. And they go on and on and on until you feel like a shriveling idiot. They made you feel insecure. They have not inspired you to be better. But I don't care how miserable a sinner comes before me. I see God in that one. And I look for the good in that one, because God is there and he is all good. He is not evil. I look and I compliment that individual. They are beautiful. They have a very special gift, a very special talent which they came from to give to the world. And in accordance with how they measure up, so the world will benefit, and so will they benefit. But most of all, God will benefit. Because he has made himself a prisoner in every single form that stands before us. And only we, isn't this a miracle? Only we can release God, who has imprisoned himself in this form of flesh. And how do we do that? We do that by putting our minds on God the Father through his Son, Christ. The universal Christ consciousness, the universal power, the universal energy, the universal will. And as we hold this perfect picture within ourselves of what we want to become, how we want to serve God and therefore ourselves, gradually the change takes place, the unfoldment takes place. To everything there is a season, as we said in this chapter this morning, a time to do this and a time to do that. And you know, if we didn't make mistakes, if we didn't do wrong things once in a while, we wouldn't know how much it hurt and want to reach out to do something better. It's an absolute necessity for growth. Don't forget that every experience which comes to anybody in life is necessary for their growth, for the expansion of their consciousness. And that expansion is necessary in order that we may one day just throw the towel in, so to speak, and say, well, here am I, Lord, take me. do with me as you will. And at that moment, God reaches down when you have surrendered your all to him and stopped trying to do things and run the world yourself and let him do it. He reaches down, and in his infinite love and mercy, he lifts you up into his arms of everlasting bliss. He puts you through the experiences which will purify you. You do go into hell, because during this experience you are taken into your subconscious mind, and you are made to face the things that you have done, not only in this incarnation, but some others turn up too. And you know beyond all question of a doubt that you have lived before. And you see people that you are associated with in your present life walking before you in another lifetime. And you see also, in many cases, the reason why you're with them this time. Because you still have a debt to pay. Or you have a work to do together. Or something. It's predestined. Now you come with the results of your bad karma, but also you come with a new opportunity for growth. You have a destiny to fulfill in this life. And you must fulfill it. And that destiny, and it is the same with every man, I don't care what your particular gift is, I don't care what idea you have of what your destiny is, you have but one real destiny, and that is to realize what your oneness with God. And all of the other goals that you've set yourself in life, all of the other things that you do, all of the other gifts that have been given to you, which you express outwardly, are but to give you the necessary experiences, good and what we call bad, or difficult or joyful, that will take you to the final realization of your goal. That is true. So this we have, and it is tremendous to think that each and every one of us now are at the gate of opening, and we're going to open up a totally new world within ourselves. You're going to take a vow before God to follow this path, which is headed by Christ and this line of masters. All the way through, my Hindu master taught me about the Christ in such a beautiful way as I had never heard before in any Christian church. He made me know and realize that God was inside of myself, that he was everywhere equally present in every form, that I didn't have to go seeking, that I didn't have to go to Orthodox churches and just have a thing called faith, but that if I took the few simple methods which he pointed out were in the Christian scriptures, in the Old Testament, many of them, and some in the New, only we don't recognize them because we have been so blinded and we have to remove the blinders from our eyes, that then we would start to climb the ladder of self-realization. And one day it would happen that we would get all the way to the top. Now the way is steep. It is thorny. But don't forget that when you cry out because it hurts, that you have caused yourself to be hurt by something wrong that you have done, something against the law of God. Because he has made perfect law. He himself is perfect. He himself is all good. All the beautiful, wonderful things that we could possibly imagine. All of the adjectives we could apply. But here we are. He is all good, but he has made perfect law. Now, if we go with that law, we reward ourselves. If we go against that law, we punish ourselves. He doesn't punish us. We punish ourselves. Every man writes his own destiny upon his own forehead with his own hand. And he has no one else in this world to blame. No one. So when this time comes, whatever hurts, you've asked for it. And that's very difficult for people to accept. We are always wanting to blame somebody else for something that's happened to us. Whatever has happened, we have chosen it for ourselves, be it good or so-called evil. And we have no one else to thank, no one at all. So gear yourself, put yourself, your shoulders to the plow. And let your love for God be so great that you are willing even to give up your life. Now when I say that, I don't mean to go out and let somebody shoot you, or to hang yourself or anything like that. I mean that you should relinquish your idea of separateness from God. This idea of separation. Don't forget that the idea of separation began with and is contained in one idea. I am separate from God. Just that one sentence. But also is the idea of oneness. I and my Father are one. So if you will let go of the idea of separation, and take hold of the idea of oneness. You can have your God realization now, but I dare you to do it. Why? Because your minds are so conditioned that you won't let yourself. You don't believe. You don't have faith. There is such a thing as miracles. But everybody goes around packing all the things they've had all of their lives. It's like the man who had had his new car for a while, and as all cars do after they have run a while, one of the headlights went out. So he had to go into a garage and have a new headlight put on. But he didn't want to let go of the old headlight because it had served him well and furnished light for the boat for a long time. So he had the mechanic bore a little hole in the front of the car and he carried that along with him too. And then the tailpipe, which tailpipes often do, got a couple of holes in it. And so he had to have a new tailpipe put on. And so he didn't want to relinquish the old one after all. He might be able to use that someday. If he put it someplace else, he might not know where he put it, like I don't so many times. So he decided he would have that put on the back of the car alongside of the other tailpipe. And then one of the fenders went bad. Well, that fender had really served him in good stead. So he got a new fender put on, but he had the mechanic tie the fender to the back of his car, and he was going around loaded with all these old things. Now, how do you think that car looked? And how do you think it felt? Everything has feelings, you know. And that's the way we do. We hang on to the old instead of letting go and reaching for the new. So you've got to let go of the old and reach for the new. Now, the same applies to religion. When you come to the point where you have advanced where you are now, each and every one of you, or you wouldn't be here, where you're ready to walk that last mile, and you're ready to get the key that you can put into the lock and open the door that will take you into the kingdom of heaven within yourself, you've got to leave your old baggage behind. You've got to leave your old religious beliefs behind. There's a story told in India about the elephant. You know, the elephant is made great use of in India. He's a tremendous beast, a burden, and he really takes the place of a tractor. He carries things on his back, he brushes through things and knocks them down where they need knocking and all the rest of it. But also, he is a symbol of wisdom. And they even have a god whom they call Ganesha, who is half elephant and half mind. Man, I should say. And they always say that you must worship Ganesha first. And yet, Ganesha is a symbol of material wealth and prosperity. Why do they say that, this people in this spiritual nation? Because they know that man must go through all of his evolutionary processes in order to come to the point where he wants to worship God. So they tell him to worship Ganesha first and then to go on to worship God. And there's a story told about a Mahutu, who is the elephant driver, and he holds the elephant by his ears with his 2 feet, and he directs him in that way, and then with a stick, and sometimes they have a sharp point on it. If the elephant doesn't do what he's supposed to, why, they prick him with this needle point tool that they have, or instrument. And so the elephant then does what he's supposed to do. But this Mahout had 6 sons, and amazingly enough, every one of them were blind. They were born blind. And they were in a sorry state. But he did the best he could with them. He tried to teach them all things. So one day, they were pretty well grown up. And he told them that he was going to give them a new experience, that they could all wash the elephant. So each one of them started out to wash the elephant. And one washed the elephant's sides. Another one washed his trunk. Another one washed his ears. Another one his legs. Another one his tusks. And another one his tail. And when they finished washing, they were delighted in the experience because they were learning something new, and it's very difficult for a blind person, you know, to experience all of the things that we who have sight do. And they were just thrilled. And one little fellow says, oh, I know what the elephant is, the one who is washing the side of the elephant. He says it's like a huge wall. And another one says, oh, no, you're totally wrong. That was the one that was washing the trunk. He says it's like a bamboo pole. And the one who was washing the ears of the elephant says, why, you're just absolutely ridiculous fools. You don't know what you're talking about. He says the elephant is like 2 huge banana leaves. And the one who was washing the legs says, you're all wrong. You absolutely don't know what you're speaking about. He says, The element is like a fleshly ceiling held upright on four pillars. And so then, finally, there was the last boy said, "You know, you're all wrong." He says, "The element is a piece of string hanging from heaven." Now, he was the shortest one in the group, you see, and he couldn't follow that tale perfectly. So, as far as he was concerned, he was standing down. So, the father was in great merriment over all of this that was going on and listening to the brothers fight over what the elephant looked like. And he said, "My sons, I want to tell you something. You're both all right and you're both all wrong." He said, "You know, only I know what the whole elephant looks like, because I have the vision to see. But each of you know only that part of the elephant which you washed and took care of." And so it is with the religious field. Each one has their own religion. They think it's the best. They become bigoted. They become narrow. They become defensive of it. But the time comes when it's time to open your eyes and heal yourself from blindness. And the Christ within you does that. He healed the blind man, did he not? And many people symbolically think that it's the symbol of Christ healing the eyes, putting the spittle upon the eye, is probably the healing process, which could happen, because miracles happen too, believe me. When you get on this path, it's the greatest path of miracles in the world. And if you adopt a positive attitude and put your mind on God alone, and do your best to go the way to Calvary, the way to the crucifixion and beyond, into the resurrection, and the arising into the heaven of your own being, you will start to live a life such as you have never lived in all of your experience. You will go within yourself and you will see visions beyond your wildest dreams. You will gain power. You will be filled with light. But I want to warn you, don't any of you who find the ability to use power within yourself ever use it. Not one of you. Let God do it in accordance with His will. Don't lay your hands on people and heal them unless God directs you to. I'm speaking of spiritual healing. Do not do this unless He directs you to, because you do not know what you're interfering with. People have karma to work out, and suffering must ensue. If God directs you to take somebody in your arms, to put your hands upon them and heal them, do it. But just don't decide to do it of your own volition. Because you take the power to work out their karma away from them, and you retard their spiritual progress. They must suffer, because the way of the cross and the Christ is nothing but suffering. Nobody ever said it was an easy way. No way. It is the way of total submission, subjection, and surrender to God alone through Christ. Totally. And then the reward comes. After you have gone down into the subconscious of your own mind, and you have explored the three worlds, the physical, the astral or the electrical, and the subtle or the idea world, then you arise from the dead. Because as long as you have not had this experience, you are still in the world of ignorance, of darkness, the world of the living dead. It is only when you are willing to surrender this Son of Man at the feet of God that He will lift you up and truly make you His son in the spiritual sense. And this is the greatest boon that can come to man. Because when you have tapped that fountainhead of all knowledge, of all wisdom, of all power, when you have realized in truth your oneness with God, then to you as to God all things are possible. Because you are one with Him, now and forever. You don't have to keep coming back and doing it over and over again. But if your love for God and your love for humanity is great enough, you do not mind if God taps you on the shoulder and says, "Come, my child, wouldn't you like to go back and work a little bit more for me?" And you, in your blissful state, say, "Why not?" And you think, after you get back down here, "My God, why'd they ever let Him persuade me?" It is something. It is something. Believe me. Now, we're going to have a wonderful week together. I've been teaching the Seattle group this past week, and we've had some wonderful experiences together, and I know that the out-of-town people are going to have equal experience. But I want each of you to keep in mind, not the pleasures which will come, the sightseeing and all that, which I know that many of you will enjoy, and that is also a part of God, but I want you to keep God in your mind, to make him the head of your temple, to go within your temple and seal it very tight. Shut out the things of time and space, so that you can be one with his infinite life. And when you do that, you will be lifted up into a new world, a new path of truth. And instead of all of the different parts of the elephant that you have been thinking you knew before, you will see the whole elephant of wisdom before you. And you will know the real truth that was hidden. Remember that Christ said to his disciples, "To you it is given to know the mysteries or the truth, but to others in parables, lest one get something that he shouldn't have before he has earned it, because it is a thing to be earned. It is not given as a gift. It is a pearl of great price. But the gift comes through the grace of God, through the love of God. And because there is nothing but God, he lifts himself out of himself and takes himself to himself. And there is nothing but God everywhere. When you come to that state of consciousness, you are blessed indeed. It is my hope that this week will give you what you need to put your feet on the path solidly. Never to break your vow to leave this path, this line of masters headed by the Christ, and to put these things into practice until you become that. Because until you have reached a state of being, of realization, I am the I am, and fear no man, his criticism, his anything, but you are you, the separate self, God's body, entitled to all of his grace, his love in his life, and then give that to all men everywhere. Because anyone who calls himself a disciple of God and fails to do that is no disciple indeed. He is but a patient in a hospital, and he needs very great healing, believe me. So let us all live together in love, in laughter, in happiness, in contentment, and peace, and keep our minds upon the Creator of us all. Now let us pray to him. Oh, Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for thee. I kneel in adoration at thy feet. And surrender myself to thee. I feel the power of thy perfection. Surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am he. O Heavenly Father, open my eyes that I may see thy face. Open my ears that I may hear thy footsteps everywhere. Open my heart that I may feel the glory of thy love. O Heavenly Father, may thy love shine forever upon the sanctuary of my devotion. May I be able to awaken thy love in all hearts and bring them to thee.